Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Let's talk.
John Brown. White Shark, a biography of the fish that scared the world. An adult great white shark is a big shark, really big. It's been responsible for more shark bites and human deaths than any other species. That's according to the International Shark Attack File. However, it is time for us to embrace the great white shark. Have you hugged your great white shark today? It's time to look at them differently. And the man who is eminently qualified to tell me all about this, for he's written several books on nature, sharks, the shark that walked on land. Michael Bright, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Good nice to see you, Charles.
Good to have you. So you're not in a shark tank somewhere, Michael. Whereabouts are you?
No, afraid not.
Where do we find you on the? Where do we find you today then, please, sir?
I'm based in Bristol in England.
Nice.
And it's a lovely, lovely sunny day.
Right. So we'll be expecting a basking shark to come then up the Avon to say hello at some point.
Good.
Right then. Great white sharks. Let's. It's 50 years since Jaws came out. And can we argue that basically that is the start of a collective paranoia and fear of the great white shark way beyond what it actually, the threat it actually poses?
Yeah, well, it's actually quite interesting that Steven Spielberg, who directed the film Jaws, which came out, as you know, 50 years ago this year, and he said, he was on the Desert Island Discs, actually, and he said, I regret having upset the sharks, because right after the film came out, there was this mass of killing because everybody thought this was a real villain in the piece, and everybody wanted a bit of the action. So all the big fishermen, the sports fishermen, would go out, and the one thing they wanted to catch was a great white shark.
Mm.
Hell of a lot of sharks were killed. And Spielberg is very sorry that he triggered this awful thing.
But one of the things is, Michael, it's the thing that we have this, because most of us won't go much further than, in over our belly buttons at the best of times. So we don't know the ocean very well. And so the thought of, and here comes the hype, an apex predator in the sea. And it's the size of the great white shark. I mean, if you were to go sort of across the Amazon with a paper cut on your thumb and run into a swarm of piranha, the little so-and-sos, they would probably strip you your hand to the bone in seconds. But it's the size of the great white shark that gets something going in our DNA that's sort of that's prehistoric, isn't it? It's like, oh, big, scary shark. Michael?
Well, that's right. It is a big, scary shark. And when I say big, we're talking about the size of a small automobile. You know, it's about six meters, up to 6.5 meters long. Now, that's a bloody big thing. And when it attacks somebody, if a full-grown one, full-grown female, 6.5 meters long, with a mouth which can swallow a person whole, a small person whole, that's quite formidable. And of course, this is something which has frightened people for not just 50 years, but if you go back to when the people came out of Asia and moved to North America, they went down the coast there. And there's a cave there called, Bended Knee Cave on Prince Edward Island. It's another island.
Okay, fine. It's an island that's got great. Yes, exactly.
A body in there.
Yeah.
Which was 10,000 years old. And they were able to work out what the guy had been eating. and he had been eating seafood, like seals and things like that. Now, on that piece of coast, which is Alaska, you get great white sharks right up there. So this guy who ate seals probably came across the great white shark, and he probably was in awe of it. And if you go around the world, in Japan, for example, there was another preserved the body on the south part of Honshu Island. And they found people at the University of Oxford actually examined it, and it had 390 bite marks on it. And those bite marks were probably of a great white shark, because you get the huge great white sharks in that part of the world. And again, there's another one in Peru where... that's another place where there were great white sharks, and there was a body.
This is the thing. I mean, you just giving it the because if you say great white sharks to me, I'm going to think South Africa, you know, Durban, that, you know, the shark cages, shark fishing. But you've just said islands off Japan. You've said east coast up sort of Newfoundland area of North America, and then over to the other side, South America. That means that this shark is a complete survivor, and obviously can adapt to circumstances, and covers huge distances, Michael.
That's right. And the huge distances is an interesting thing, because they used to think that this shark was a coastal shark, because, of course, that's where people saw it. But actually, when they started to put tags on them, they discovered that these sharks spend most of their time in the open ocean, not at the coast. In fact, there was one which went from South Africa. She was called Nicole, named after Nicole Kidman, who was a shark aficionado.
Yeah, okay.
And Nicole, they put what's called a pop-up tag on Nicole, and off she went.
The shark, not the actress, by the way, just so we know.
That's right.
Yes, okay, just checking.
The other Nicole. And she went off. And of course, because it was a pop-up tag, it didn't give a running commentary on her journey.
Yeah.
But when it finally did pop up, they discovered that she'd swum all across the Indian Ocean to Western Australia.
Wow.
Now that's an incredible journey. Not only that, after her tag was gone, they of course lost contact with her. But a couple of months later, she was back in South Africa. They recognized her from the amount of pictures that they have of all the sharks in the area. So they instantly recognized her. And so, she went all the way around.
So is this a migrate, because it's chasing food, it's a chasing flock? Because, I mean, its natural prey isn't unwary, isn't fishermen called Quinn, is it? And so its natural prey is presumably going to be what, seals, tuna? I mean, is it following the migration of other fish which it's going to eat?
On this occasion, nobody knows why she went to Australia. But other sharks that they have studied, what happens is, with great white sharks, they change their diet as they get older. The young sharks, they eat fish. And then as they get older, they need something a little bit more oomph, you know, lots
more
of
protein.
Energy.
Yeah, those of us who work out will understand that, yeah.
So then they turn to seals and to dolphins and tuna, bluefin tuna. And in fact, in the Mediterranean, the great white sharks follow the tuna. And that's how we know how they go in that direction. Actually, there's an interesting thing about Mediterranean sharks. They did an analysis of the DNA of those sharks, and they discovered that they were more closely related to sharks in Western Australia. So what they think has happened, can you imagine that? No. What they think has happened is that the sharks came to South Africa. They got caught up on what's called Agulhas currents, circle. They have these great vortices, and they got caught up in the vortices, pitched out into the Atlantic Ocean. Their natural tendency would be to go back to Western Australia. But of course, by the time they were in the Atlantic Ocean, Africa was in the way. So what they did was they went northwards up to up the coast, the west coast of Africa, and their first time that they could go to the towards Australia, as it were, is when you reach the entrance to the Mediterranean Sea.
Indeed, which is literally where I'm sitting now, because I'm 40 minutes away from Gibraltar, and of course there are these huge tuna migrations, which is which is food on the go for these guys.
That's right, and the sharks follow them, and you can get some pretty big sharks in your area.
Yeah, indeed. But the thing is, Michael, again, bad press, because those cuddly orcas, the killer whales, you know, they're the ones, because they all look all nice and everybody's seen Free Willy, for goodness sake, but they can do more damage to people and boats or whatever than your actual great white. Just quickly, are great whites solitary apart from mating, and when they have, what do you call a little great white, what do you call a little great white shark, a calf or a sharklet? I mean, what do you call it?
A pup. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'll remember that next time. Okay, so are they solitary? Because we always think, the great white shark on its own, But how does the social structure go?
In certain parts of the world, like Guadeloupe Island off the Mexican coast, they've found, people are studying them there, they've seen sharks, great white sharks, going around in pairs. And tagging study on the east coast of America, where a pair of sharks went together all the way up the east coast, up to Newfoundland, and as far as I know, they're still together. So no, they're not. Most of them probably are solitary, but they do get together. And I think what they do is that they get together because they watch each other to see what the other one is catching. So if that one is successful, the other one will join in.
What's the life expectancy of a great white? I mean, I never thought about this. How long do they live?
A long time. I think it's up to about 70 years.
Wow, okay.
That's a long time. And they mature quite late as a consequence. So if we're catching all those, the younger sharks, they don't grow up into older sharks, which have babies and things. So it's a difficult thing for the shark, because the numbers are dropping like crazy, except in a couple of places. In the northwest coast of the northeast coast of North America, i.e. in the northwest Atlantic, The seals on which the sharks fed were killed for their oil and stuff, so they were almost annihilated. But when the seals hunting was stopped and became illegal, the seals came back, and what else came back? The great white shark came back. So now some of the highest concentrations of great white sharks are off places like Cape Cod. So in some places, they have increased in numbers, but in lots of other places, they've dropped in numbers.
And I suppose one of the things with the great white is that, seal is its natural, is what it's going to eat normally. If you don't go in the water, the chances of being attacked by a great white, unless they get an Uber and, knock on your door, are very... But if you are a surfer, for example, or you've got a wetsuit on, then it's going to come and take a nip out of you to see if you're a seal or not. And even if it's not a seal, it doesn't want to eat you, I suppose the shock and the pressure of the bite of a great white is obviously devastating. So people who get attacked by great whites, they normally die of massive trauma, shock, blood loss, because if you get nipped by another type of shark, for example, it's going to hurt, but it's not likely to be end of life stuff. Whereas obviously great white, almost prehistoric, who knows how much pressure it's putting per pounds per square, whatever, on it. It's going to basically give you the shock or kill you, if nothing else.
Well, that's right. Yes, that is true. However, the sharks, they're probably not aiming to kill you. Not the first bite that the shark makes is often an inquisitive thing.
Yeah.
And obviously, because it's so big and the bite is so strong, an inquisitive shark can be just as dangerous as if it was going to eat you. But interestingly, of all the shark attacks by great white sharks, the majority of people survive those attacks because the shark is not interested in you as food. It is inquisitive to know what you are. As you said, you look a bit like a seal in the water. Is it going to be a seal? The problem with us is even the most obese of us just doesn't have enough fat on us. Like a seal or a whale or something, and the shark. Basically, it used to be a thing called a bite and spit hypothesis, which the shark takes a bite, spits you out, and then goes away. And as I said, lots of people survive.
Yeah. It's not they're not into a mousse bouche then, great whites. They don't want a little sort of, you know, a little taster before they go for the main course. They, you know, we are not, it is just, but like I said, it is that massive trauma and the, you know, the pressure per bite that's going to kill you.
They're all different though. All these sharks are different.
Yeah.
They're like us. They have personalities. So some might be a little bit more inquisitive than others. So you can't really make a general
fair enough
about all.
So you've written about sharks and many other things with nature during your career. Why have you decided to? Is it because it's still there in our psyche, Michael? Is it that you wanted to write about great whites in particular? Because you've written about the sharks that lived on land, and you know, other books about sharks and other nature and other wildlife as well. So is the great white shark just a fabulous tale to cook? Because when you say you don't have to explain what a great white is rather than a tiger or a whatever fin or a hammerhead, because I mean, that's what, but you, other sharks, people won't know. But a great white, immediately everybody knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, that's right. It has fascinated me since I was a little boy. I think it's an amazing animal. So, you know, it's very charismatic, as you said. But the other thing is that the other thing that's interesting about it, it's probably the shark which has had the most scientific attention, has had the most scientific papers written about it. So we know an incredible amount about it, although we don't know a lot. it's a contrast, really, isn't it?
So what are you hoping that people will learn from Great White?
I think I'd like them to come away with the idea that the white shark has had a bad reputation, which it doesn't deserve, and that the science is telling us now that the shark is something special, something we should preserve, and something which should continue to live in the oceans.
The book is called White Shark, a biography of the fish that scared the world. It is by Michael Bright. Listeners, go onto our website, talkradio.tre.radio, and it is in the virtual bookstore. You'll see the front cover. Click on that front cover, and it will be winging its way, not on the back of a great white shark, but by a well-known delivery service. Michael, can people find you online? Is there a website that you have, or do you do the same?
I have a website. I do have a website. Yeah, there's not much on it.
Fair enough, but listen. If you wish to order the book, and I please go forth and order it. It looks a fascinating read to impress people on the beach in Spain as you sit there reading about and then go plunging into the water. The book is called White Shark. It is by Michael Bright. Michael, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for inviting me.